Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is episode number 151 with Anne Benninghoff. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Anne Benninghoff, we explore a number of interesting topics like capacity is so much deeper than the surface, how leaders can train educators in a co-teaching environment, and the importance of courage regarding student success. Today's podcast upgrade is a co-teaching quick start expertly designed by Anne, including 12 co-teaching guidelines for admin, when teacher A talks, teacher B could be, and co-teaching quantifiable measures. You can download it at betterleadersbetterschools.com/151-Anne-Benninghoff or click the podcast upgrade link in the show notes page. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. But before we jump into the episode, I would like to take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving student soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Are you attending the Mastery Leadership Institute this summer in Salt Lake City? You know, educators are great. They're great at collecting data. But how do your teachers use that data in real time? Learn how to stop just collecting data and to start using it at the Mastery Leadership Institute. Learn more about this event, including the locations and dates, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I am joined today with Anne M. Benninghoff, an internationally recognized consultant and trainer who has more than 35 years of experience working with students and teachers in a variety of public and private settings. She has been a special education teacher, adjunct faculty member of the University of Hartford and the University of Colorado, has published several books and videos, and provided staff development in all 50 states. Anne has authored 8 books, several educational videotapes, and is a regular contributor to blogs and webinars. She has also collaborated with numerous state agencies to bring about inclusive practices in her teaching, presenting, and writing. Anne focuses on creative, practical solutions for more effectively including students with diverse learning needs in general education classrooms. Anne, thanks for joining me on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Danny.
So I'd like to start off with just an easy one. What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, when I was a child, I grew up in a kind of low-income neighborhood of Washington, D.C., and there were lots of immigrant families. Both of my parents were immigrants. And in the afternoons and evenings when it was so hot in the summer, most of us would wander outside onto the porches to catch a breath of fresh air, or the children would play in the street. And the summer that I was 9 years old, there was a very good looking, at least to my 9 year old eyes, a very good looking young man that lived right across the street from me. He was 18 that summer. His name was Wayne. And in addition to being athletic and good looking, he was really kind to children. So he would play whatever silly games we came up with and carry us piggyback. And he loved to throw a football back and forth in the street with my brothers. One day that summer that I was 9, a letter arrived at Wayne's house announcing that he had been selected for service in Vietnam. Mm. And we were all quite devastated by that. But he went off with great pride. He wanted to serve his country, and off he went. And summer turned into fall and then winter. And finally, in the spring, another letter arrived at Wayne's home, this time announcing he was coming home early. Mm. Unfortunately, it was because he had stepped on a landmine and lost his leg and damaged his arm. And again, we are all fairly devastated by this, but happy that he would be returning home after rehab. And then one night in the middle of the night, my parents shook me awake and they said, "Quick, put on your bathrobe and come on outside." And this was quite unusual, but I did as I was told. And as I went outside, it was pitch black, but there was a beam of light from the lamppost on the middle of the street. And there in the middle of that light sat Wayne in his wheelchair. He had just returned home for the very first time, and everybody from the neighborhoods poured out into the streets to greet him. And as the fathers went up to greet him, he insisted on pushing himself up out of his wheelchair to just stand on one leg and shake their hands. And they all kept saying, no, 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 sit down. It's okay. It's okay. But he insisted on standing up. I think he wanted to show everyone what he was capable of. Mm-hmm. And he went on to show us that he was capable of so many things. He became a competition high diver on one leg. And he continued to throw a football back and forth in the streets with my brothers, all while bouncing just on one leg. He was the first person I ever knew that had a disability, or that I was aware had a disability. Mm-hmm. And he showed me how capacity is so much deeper than what we see on the surface. And that when we can mine for that capacity and really help each other dig deep for those capacities, that, all kinds of things can happen. And that really inspired my interest in children with disabilities and my decision to become a special education teacher, to try to help mine for the capacities rather than being focused on the disabilities.
So yeah, I love this idea that you brought up, that capacity is so much deeper than the surface. And then you talked about, mining for these talents and the strengths, right, that people have that we might not see. So I'm curious, can you maybe share a story or talk a bit about, like, how does that play out in the classroom?
Sure. Well, I think unfortunately, in the past at least, special education teachers and maybe general education teachers were trained to be what I think of as deficit focused. We were trained in a deficit model. What's wrong with this student and how do we fix it, versus that capacity model? So not that we don't all have deficits, but that if we can focus on the strengths, those talents, those capacities, then that might help. So as an example, I was working with a student on the spectrum, fairly mild autism, but struggling with some of the academic content in the class. And what we realized, that he was incredibly talented as a problem solver. Puzzles and the act of puzzling things out was very interesting to him, and he was good at it. And so when we were able to start putting our content and our curriculum more into a problem-solving mode and activities related to that and puzzles and so forth, that we were able to really show his peers what his strengths were, but also give him that awareness and help mm-hmm. him tap into his own strengths so that he could become more of a self-advocate in other classes.
And you're crushing this interview, and you're getting me so excited, because I really love the idea of deficit versus capacity model, strengths versus deficits. And you're talking about in a classroom setting, working with all types of kids, but this works for leaders too, looking at their organizations and why look for, weaknesses in these problems. A lot of times that exacerbates, the errors that are already there, things that, might be frustrating to you as a leader. But if, just like a teacher, if you're looking for what's great about kids or great about staff in your organization, you're going to get more of that. In addition, when you're a leader, I think it's like your duty to put people in positions where they can let their strengths shine,
Right.
And you really have to have a deep understanding of your people in order to make that happen. But that's such an important point.
Yeah. And actually, in the corporate world, I do some work in the corporate world as well. And they, probably 5 or 8 years ago, moved away from talking about training and development and instead started using the phrase talent development. And so I actually like to think of myself as a talent developer rather than a trainer or presenter or even teacher. I think talent developer, whether you're talking about that with staff, with faculty, with teachers, or with children, it's the same kind of focus, is that we're looking at what are the talents, how do we develop those and develop them in a broad enough way that they can apply in all the necessary ways that they need to do their jobs. But it just does have that more positive focus.
Yeah, and that's where we want to be. So I appreciate you sharing that. This podcast is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators and podcasts by educators. Listen to all the great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. That's edupodcastnetwork.com. So I know you have several books out, and obviously you're an expert with co-teaching and inclusion, and we're going to come back to this, but I want to explore just maybe some of the routines and rituals that Anne has to be successful. And I'm curious, you know, how do you prepare so that you're able to have a successful day? Do you have any routines or rituals that help you get in the zone, so to speak?
Well, I am a huge believer in exercise. I actually just tweeted out, I think yesterday, something from John Medina's Brain Rules book about the power of exercise to keep us sharp and focused. So I exercise almost every morning, 7 days a week. I do triathlons, the short distance, the sprints, okay, and have fun with that. So I'm usually biking, swimming, or running, or walking if I need to, just about every morning doing something like that. So I do believe that that wakes us up. And I think that's great for kids too. I love school programs that have exercise opportunities first thing in the day for children, you know, before they start school. Mm-hmm. And even when I raised my own daughter, we taught her to get up and exercise in the morning and how much sharper that makes you for the day. So that's usually one of my routines in the morning. And then I do have a kind of an inspirational app that I look through and read through before getting into the business emails and the Twitter and all of that. So just having some motivational thoughts each morning is helpful for me. Cup of coffee, of course. I just splurged at Christmas for myself and bought one of those milk frothers and steamers.
Oh, you're the real deal now. Okay.
Yeah, I am. I'm just enjoying that so much. I feel like it's a nice little splurge. I do think we have to kind of splurge on ourselves and take care of ourselves. So that's my splurge for this year.
Yeah. And so that's to make lattes and things like that then?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So, you know, that gets me started off well. And then I'm sure, like many people, I try to be very organized, and I've got all my appointments and to-do lists and things on my calendar. I use technology mostly for all of that. And so I'm always working on something, even if I'm on a plane traveling to a school somewhere, I'm working on writing blog posts or working on my presentation notes or my next slides or something. Usually just really maximizing every minute that I have. Even standing in line, I do a lot of travel, so I'm standing in lines at airports and other places like that. And rather than get frustrated in lines, I'm usually on Twitter or doing something productive so that I'm not wasting time and feeling like, oh, I'm stuck in this airport. So yeah, just trying to maximize every minute.
Love it. And on the, you know, the flip side of that, how do you wind down and unplug from work? And if you struggle with that and don't unplug, you know, what are the challenges there?
Well, I've gotten much better about unplugging, but I'm a great one for escaping into a novel. I do read a lot of nonfiction, especially work-related books and so forth, but I do love fiction. And so I'm always have two or three books on my iPad that I can read at any point. And that's a great escape for me. Good fiction, right? You know, you can really get into the stories.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my escape. Several years ago, I did have trouble unplugging. And even at night, I would wake up in the middle of the night, not able to stop all of the rattling around in my head of all the things I had to do. And I had somebody actually tell me, you just say to your brain, no. So you wake up in the middle of the night, you're thinking about all those things. And they said, just say no. And I thought, oh, that's so ridiculous. But I was having so much trouble sleeping through the night that I started trying it, and it worked for me.
It worked.
So I still, every once in a while, if I have a hard time like that and I catch myself thinking about work, I literally just kind of tell my brain, you know, we have control over our thoughts to some extent, right? And so I'm just grabbing control and saying no. And that usually works for me.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, we always have the power to choose, right?
Right.
And I think our minds are a lot stronger than we even realize. So just, you know, taking control, saying no, or if it's visualization, if it's affirmations that you repeat, all these things start to add up. I've seen now that I've been doing it maybe a year and a half off and on, almost 2 years with the gratitude journal, how not so sunny disposition, sort of natural disposition, has turned more positive, right?
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
I think it's just through rewiring my brain and the messages that I'm sending myself. So, yeah.
See, I knew there was some reason that I liked you, Danny, because I do a gratitude journal every night, too.
Yes.
And I don't make a big deal of it. You know, I didn't want it to feel like it had to take me 20 minutes. I just list the five things in the day that I was thankful for. And sometimes it's just a good meal or a talk with a friend, or I saw a cute kid that made me smile, or, you know, it could be anything. I often end up writing, you know, just work that I love. I'm so grateful that I enjoy my work when there are so many people in the world that don't like what they do. So yes, having those ways to be grateful for anything. I will tell you one other not so secret thing, I guess. And that is that I broke down and got a tattoo about 5 years ago, I guess now. And it actually is kind of my mantra tattooed onto me. And that's just be still. Mm. And so, you know, there are times when I just look at that as a reminder that I just need to try to be still occasionally, because again, if we're not taking care of ourselves, it's hard for us to give our best to others.
Yeah. Did you design the font? Did you allow the tattooist to do that, or?
No, I kind of designed it, and cool. I have little waves underneath it, actually, because I feel like sometimes the waves are tossing us around, you know, and even in those moments of waves, we have to try to just be still and, you know, breathe.
It's beautiful. A lot of people actually ask me a lot, like, that middle name, Sunshine, is that your real name? And I'm like, no, not at all. I gave it to myself about 3 years ago. You know, my name's Daniel Evan Bauer. That's what's on my birth certificate. But if you see me on Facebook Live or listen to podcasts, I'll say Danny Sunshine Bauer. And started a lot with the gratitude journal, but went through some stuff that was just hard, right?
Yeah.
And so, and, you know, the message I told myself is like, listen, I can count on storms in my life, just like you can count on the waves. Tough stuff is around the corner. It happens every day. And some of it can be crippling at times.
Right.
But what I've learned through life is that if it's storming now, sunshine's right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And so that was just kind of like a mantra for myself, just to remind me that, you know, I can get through it. And I like myself a lot better when I'm happier, I'm more positive, you know, it's where I want to be. So that's my version of be still.
Yeah. Good. That's a great story.
Thank you. Thank you. And I promised that we would get back to your book. So tell me about Co-Teaching That Works. What's the story of starting that?
I have written a lot of different books. The very first book I wrote was called Ideas for Inclusion, and it was more than 20 years ago now. It's not even in print anymore. Hard to believe that I'm that old, but I am. And I actually had a dream. Mm. I'd never thought that I was going to write a book. I had no intention of writing a book. I was a special education teacher. But that day during the day, I had heard on, I believe it was NPR, interview with a couple of authors who had written a book called 50 Simple Things You Can Do to Save the Planet. Mm-hmm. And they were environmental scientists, quite expert in their field, but their point in the interview was that anybody can take steps towards saving the planet. You don't have to have a PhD, you don't have to be a scientist, et cetera. And that was, you know, 20 years ago, really still in the very early stages of the whole eco-friendly recycling movements and all. Anyway, I listened to that during the day, and that night I had a dream that I was writing a book called 50 Simple Things You Can Do for Inclusion. Mm-hmm. And so when I woke up, I thought, oh, wow, you know, that's kind of a cool idea. You don't have to be an expert in inclusion. You don't have to be a university professor. You don't need to know all the research and philosophy and rationale. You can just do simple things to make a difference for kids that might normally have been excluded from general ed classrooms. And so I went about starting to write that book and found a publisher that was interested. And so that was just kind of the very beginning of writing for me. And every book I've written, I think I've got 8 or 9 at this point. Every time when I'm done, I say, that's it. I'm never writing another book. It's kind of like giving birth to a baby, I think. You know, there's so much more work involved near the end than you expect. And it can be a somewhat painful process. But then usually, oh, a year or two later, somebody says to me, oh, you should write a book on that. And then I get the bug and write again. So I've been doing co-teaching work, both as a teacher myself, and then eventually as a coach and a consultant with districts around the country. I've been working on that for quite a long time. And so I was approached by a publisher who said, hey, we should get a book out on co-teaching with all of your really practical ideas. And so I put those ideas together into that book. And I guess it's been out for a number of years now. It's set up to be used for book discussion groups.
Okay.
If needed for school districts. So a lot of schools will, if they're about to enter into co-teaching, I think good administrators know not to just say to teachers, okay, this year you're going to co-teach, meet your co-teaching partner, here they are, you start tomorrow. Instead, we want to get some training, some information, some dialogue and conversation happening in advance so that those relationships are set up for success rather than scrambling after the fact with all kinds of problems. So the book and some of the work that I do with districts, that's all designed to try to make those partnerships more successful so that students can be more successful in those classrooms.
Hey, Danny Sunshine here, and I'd like to tell you a little more about the Mastery Leadership Institute taking place this summer in Salt Lake City. This event is an intensive 3-day professional development retreat facilitated by nationally recognized principals. Educators will be immersed in full-day workshops focused on strategies to effectively use data to target interventions, personalize learning, and evaluate instructional efficacy. True school transformation is only possible when educators are empowered to use the data they collect to immediately impact teaching and learning. Learn more about the Mastery Leadership Institute, including upcoming dates and locations, at masteryconnect.com/MLI. That's masteryconnect.com/MLI. Do you have some go-to tips that you could share with our listeners in terms of, you know, the listeners, as we talked in the pre-chat, mostly leading a school, local school or a district, but they might be classroom teachers as well. And I'm just curious, yeah, go-to tips in terms of training that could be offered to help build those relationships for the co-teaching environment.
Sure. I think one of the most powerful things for new co-teaching partners to do is to watch together video of co-teaching occurring. When they actually see it, rather than just talking about it, we often hear them say things like, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like, yeah. Right? They have a misperception of what it might look like in the classroom, for perhaps from bad experiences in the past or just what they've imagined in their own mind. And so having some shared viewing and then having the opportunity to talk about that afterwards, hey, is that what you thought it would look like? Did you like how they did this? Or, you know, what might you do differently? And so to that end, I did start a YouTube channel a number of years ago, and I've done some work with the Bureau of Education and Research, BER, and they created with me some co-teaching videos, and there are clips of some of those videos on my YouTube channel, which you can find at Ann Benninghoff. They're available for free for anybody to watch, and I think those can be really great conversation starters for teachers to work together through.
I love that idea. You know, I used to coach basketball, and anybody that's a sports nut knows that top teams, right, they review tape. And so just the aha that I heard in your voice when they say, oh, that's what co-teaching should look like, right? It makes sense that we would tape it and unpack it and talk about and strategize, you know, what this could look like in our reality and in our school. I'm going to describe real quick two co-teaching experiences I had as an educator. One was, you know, probably not the model and was terrible. And then one was pretty good. But the sad thing is, this first experience I'm going to describe was the norm for me. Okay. And this is where I would work with a special ed teacher. We were quote unquote co-teaching, but irregardless of how many invitations I made to plan together, to share the stage, so to speak, to both deliver, you know, instruction and work with all the kids and that kind of stuff, it was very much, you know, these are my kids and these are the ones I'm going to work with and these are your kids. And that wasn't coming from my mouth as the classroom teacher.
Sure.
That was no good in my opinion. But then I will say, so I'm going to shout out to Eric Imke. I don't know if you listen to the podcast, buddy, but you were the best co-teacher I ever worked with. He knows that and I love him. And it was so fun. We also coached basketball together. We lied to the children together and said we were brothers and everybody believed it. It was awesome. But with Eric, he owned the classroom.
Right.
And so we sat down, we carved out time that wasn't necessarily given to us by the school. We carved out time to still plan together. We designed everything together. We both taught, so it wasn't just me. He taught as much as I did and introduced lessons and delivered instruction. We worked with all the kids, so it wasn't these are yours and these are mine. We worked with every single kid. And on top of it, he evaluated work from all the kids of that class too and gave feedback. And so did mm-hmm. I, which I thought was just so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely, you know, loved working with him because it felt like a true partnership. And man, that feels great because you have somebody else you could rely on, and teaching is tough enough on your own, you know? And when you got a partner to share that work with, I mean, that was just a really beautiful experience.
Yeah. Well, you said so many true things there about the importance of that sense of shared ownership for the classroom. I like to think in terms of we language versus I language. So when I'm observing teachers or talking with them, you know, if I hear a lot of, well, I want you to do this and I've planned for that to happen. And, you know, that gives me a sense that they're really not yet thinking about it as a classroom that's theirs jointly together, that sense of ours. And so often the special educator or the ELL specialist or the gifted and talented teacher or whomever you're co-teaching with, so often we find that they're underutilized. And by that, I don't mean that they're not busy. They can be very busy in the classroom, but they're underutilized. They're wandering up and down the aisles. Mm-hmm. They're tapping kids on the shoulder. They're leaning against the wall, waiting for the lecture to finish, so they can then get up and help, or they pull a small group and only work with that small group. And all of these different specialists have so many talents, right? We're coming back to that talent developer idea. They have so many talents to bring to the classroom, and that's why they're assigned to be in there, because they have different talents and different training or skills than the general education teacher does. And, you know, if we wanted two gen ed teachers, we'd put two gen ed teachers in the room, but we don't want that. We're looking at putting someone with a different talent set or a different skill set into the room. But then if we're not using those talents, then co-teaching doesn't work. And so a lot of people have that negative experience or that view that you had, where the specialist is kind of hanging off to the side, waiting till the lecture's over, pulling a small group, just doing that, not doing that co-planning. Then what we find is that the test scores aren't really going up. The children aren't really doing better. Yep. And people say, oh, co-teaching doesn't work. Well, I wouldn't call that co-teaching.
Right.
I would maybe call that in-class support, but I clearly wouldn't call that co-teaching. In my trainings that I do, one of the things I like to ask people is if they've ever seen that movie Karate Kid. So have you seen that before?
Of course. And I did a Facebook Live on the Karate Kid strategy, but that's a different topic. Please.
Well, I will have to look that up. But, you know, in the Karate Kid, they put their hands up, right? The two hands go up, and I have all my audience members put their hands up, and we know what they say, right? They say, wax on, wax off, wax on, wax off. Yeah. And those two things have to go together. And then I tell them, okay, keep your hands up, and now we're going to say this, co-teaching, co-planning, co-teaching, co-planning. Mm-hmm. They go hand in hand. So we have to find ways to help support teachers do that co-planning, have that time together to talk about instruction, to talk about their relationships, to have courageous conversations, all of those things. And that's a huge way for administrators to support co-teaching, is to make sure that they're setting schedules in such a way or providing the resources so that the two teachers can plan together. And then also being really clear about the expectation is that you will plan together, right? Every once in a while, I hear about a school that's gone to great lengths to set up schedules that people have common planning time. And then the two teachers, when I ask them about it, they say, oh, well, no, we're not getting together then. We're doing other things. So we, you know, if we're going to get the time set up, then we also need to make sure that everyone understands that this is time that we expect you to plan for instruction, for co-teaching, co-instructing. Mm. And then sometimes even helping them to know what that looks like. How do we do that effectively?
Co-teach, co-plan, same as wax on and wax off. And in my Facebook Live, I use that, the dual, I guess, image of the wax on, wax off with things you can control and things you can't. Because if you, you know, remember Danny's getting his butt kicked and he's harassed and bullied by these kids at school. And Mr. Miyagi comes and saves his life, jumping over the fence and takes out all the bullies. And so he wants to jump to black belt status right away, but you can't do that. You have to start at the bottom first and you have to learn the foundations. And so for me, the Karate Kid strategy is just to get a little bit of relief. And when you're feeling overwhelmed, I just want people to list everything that's driving them crazy, right? As long as that is like 10 things to 100, whatever that is. And then take that list and divide it into two, things you can control and things you can't. And then focus on the things you can control, start knocking those things out. And you should be able to get a little bit of relief. So that's the Karate Kid strategy. But I like that too. Co-teach, co-plan. It's in my mind. So
yeah,
that's
good. Well, they go hand in hand. And then within that, of course, we need to help the specialist be sure that they're bringing bringing in the specially designed instruction into that lesson. Right. I mentioned earlier that, you know, we're not really looking to clone the two teachers. I actually wrote an article a couple of years ago. You'd be able to go back and find it at Educational Leadership or ASCD, called To Clone or Not to Clone, because it's my contention that we're not looking for clones of the teachers in the classrooms, but instead, again, really utilizing the two different talents. And special education teachers particularly have to make sure that they're providing the specially designed instruction for students with disabilities. And often we get so caught up in doing the curriculum and supporting the gen ed teacher that we forget that we have a very clear legal and ethical obligation in the classrooms. And sometimes I find that school leaders don't necessarily know what specially designed instruction looks like. Mm-hmm. It's different than high quality instruction. It's not the same thing. And so we need our school leaders to also learn about co-teaching and specially designed instruction and what that all is, so that when they're doing their walkthroughs and so forth, they can support their teachers, make sure that their teachers are really giving kids their very best.
Thank you for distinguishing that. And I hope that the listeners are getting excited about inclusion and co-teaching as much as I am talking to you right now. And one thing I want to tell the listeners, something new-ish that was a goal of mine in 2018 is to work with the incredible guests like Anne to create these podcast upgrades, I'm calling them. But just things to support the listener and take the learning a step or two further. So if you are a school leader or a teacher, some things that Anne has designed specifically for you would be 12 co-teaching guidelines for admin, or when teacher A talks, teacher B could be dot, 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 and then co-teaching quantifiable measures. So if you just click the show notes page there on your phone, or if you're watching, you know, listening on the website, you can get access to all those expertly designed resources from Anne. So thank you so much for creating those for the Better Leaders, Better Schools listeners.
Yeah, my pleasure. I find that teachers need cheat sheets, and I think administrators do too, you know, kind of yes. little quick reference sheets. In schools now, we're talking all the time about anchor charts, right? Every classroom has anchor charts. And to me, an anchor chart is defined as a chart, a visual that is a quick reference for key essential information. If children can't remember it, they can look up at it. And I think that teachers sometimes need the same kind of thing. You know, we need to know what that essential information is. We can't be expected to remember every little thing. So why not have an anchor chart on the wall for teachers? So one of my favorites is I'll have teachers look at that teacher A, teacher B list that you just mentioned. Often what happens is while one teacher is lecturing, the other one is kind of twiddling their thumbs, not quite sure of what to do while that teacher is lecturing. So we just brainstormed a list of 30 different things that want the other person could be doing that are still related to the instruction, right? We don't want them going to take a coffee break or checking mm-hmm. email, but how are they staying engaged in the instruction for kids? And then I just suggest that teachers pick 5 or 8 of those that are not a natural part of their repertoire, things that they wouldn't typically think of, but that they like the idea, and put those on an anchor chart, put them on the wall. So then when somebody's, you know, kind of standing around twiddling their thumbs while the other's lecturing, there's a cheat sheet right there for them to see what to do. So that would be my recommendation for that particular resource that's available.
So I know that, you know, we've talked a bunch about co-teaching and inclusion, but you also mentioned in some resources you sent me that you have this sort of secondary mission to help with people improve their presentation skills, specifically, I think, to adult learners.
That's right.
So I'm curious if you could share a little bit about that, too.
Sure. Well, you know, when I was a freshman in college, I was assigned to an 8 a.m. chemistry class, and my roommate and I would go, and frankly, we would kind of sleep and snooze through most of those lessons because the chemistry professor, very typical for that day and age, would stand and lecture at us, occasionally throw up a photo, and that would be about it. And so it was time for midterms, and we were so far behind. And luckily, there was a 24-hour coffee shop on the corner. So I rushed down there with my roommate, and we came back with these mega cups of coffee. And it was actually the first time I'd ever had coffee because my parents were both British tea drinkers. And within seconds, the words kind of jumped off the page, and our conversation was, yeah. you know, so much richer. And it dawned on me even then and throughout the years since then that that's what good teaching should be, that caffeine should be built in up front. You know, we should have a room full of awake, alert, engaged learners at any age. And so about 5 years ago, I started developing a book and some work around caffeinated learning, how to help adult learners.
I was wondering where that name came from.
Yeah. How to help adult learners kind of be more awake and alert and engaged in classrooms. Probably like most of your listeners, I've been to lots of conferences where I have unfortunately had to sit and listen to a lecture from someone on good teaching practices. And I find it a little ironic that they're talking about good teaching practices while not modeling good teaching practices.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there are just some simple ways that we can have, even in a large auditorium audience, have people engaging more with the content and therefore walking away learning the message, right? Really remembering the message, carrying it forward, rather than walking away and forgetting right away what it is that you were trying to teach them. So that's true, whether that's running a faculty meeting, you know, how do administrators keep their faculty engaged at, you know, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon? They've had a long day, and how can we keep them alert and engaging with the material that is important so that they're actually learning it? But that's also true if anyone is presenting at their local conferences at their state level or, you know, region to region, or even presenting at organizations around the country, around the world, that they shouldn't feel like they have to stand and just lecture from a PowerPoint the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. And man, it is ironic. I don't even know why that happens, right? That people will talk about classroom engagement strategies or whatever and just be so impossibly like boring while they're out there and presenting. So yeah, it's crazy. I appreciate you sharing what you just said there.
Well, I think we get inhibited by the fact that we're facing a bunch of adults. And so we forget all of a sudden, we have this amnesia about what are good teaching practices, because it's not all that different, frankly, between good teaching practices with children. You know, we know that we shouldn't just be lecturing to children for 45 minutes, and yet we do it to adults. So there's so many simple ways to just have people turn and talk quickly with the person next to them, you know, come up with a quick idea of how they could apply it, share that with somebody nearby, stand up in response to a question that's asked of the audience, or, you know, just simple things that don't have to slow you down, that don't have to be too silly. You know, I think sometimes people worry about, oh, I don't want to be silly with adults. I don't think you have to do that, right? You can be serious about your content still, but have people interacting with it.
Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. I'm curious, have you ever read The Compelling Communicator by any chance?
No, I haven't. Sounds like a great title.
Yeah, it's Mastering the Art and Science of Exceptional Presentation Design. And it's by this guy, Tim Pollard. And he'll talk a little bit about what you're saying too, that it doesn't have to just be, you know, lecture driven. And for him in the business world, you know, it's like PowerPoint driven. And Seth Godin has written a lot about how to use PowerPoints in an effective way. And it changed how I presented maybe 6-7 years ago. I saw him live and it changed everything I did in just using more images and shorter text. Like, what's the point? If you're just going to read the slides, why have all the words up there? Like, I could just read it and then save us all time. But, you know, if you use images and fewer words and juxtaposition and irony and tell great stories, that keeps people engaged too, you know?
Right.
But Tim, he doesn't talk that much about the compelling communicator. He's more about like presentation design, like the structure of it. Mm-hmm. And he offered some tips in terms of, just putting it together from start to finish and some research into how our brains are wired, what's going to stick into our minds. And
right.
So like you said, it's such a key thing. Like, yeah, you know, if you have this great presentation or whatever, but literally 15 minutes later, people can't remember your five top points. What was the whole point?
Exactly. It's a waste.
So, you know, he helps out with that.
Yeah. And so I have a lot of that in my book, Caffeinated Learning, but I also have a website, caffeinatedlearning.com. And I write a blog post usually, oh gosh, just depends upon how busy I'm, but usually about every week or two. And so I love listeners to sign up for that. They can do that on the website and they'll just get that in their inbox maybe twice a month with tips on easy ways that you can make your presentations or your meetings or whatever it might be, your trainings, more caffeinated. So they can check that out if they're interested in that. I also wanted to mention a book that I'm reading right now that I think you would probably like. It's called The Power of Moments.
Oh, the Heath Brothers?
Yeah, it's the new one out by the Heath Brothers. And it is excellent. And it's just got me thinking about all of the ways that anyone can boost the power of moments with people. And so I think anyone who's in any kind of leadership position or just trying to influence and bring about change, coaching people and so forth. Lots of examples, as they always write in their books, very practical, interesting story examples, but it's really got my brain just buzzing about how to really elevate the moments, notice the moments and elevate them for people so that they become more powerful.
I'm really drawn to that idea of noticing them too, you know, and being mindful enough to be able to seize on that. Elevating it will be a different skill set for me as well. But, you know, I think that first step is to even be able to notice. And, you know, listeners, listen, Anne shared a lot of really awesome resources, Co-Teach Networks, Caffeinated Learning. I talked about the Compelling Communicator and she just mentioned the power of moments. So those books and the websites, Ideas for Educators, Caffeinated Learning, her email, Twitter, Facebook, all of it's going to be linked up in the show notes. Just so you know, in case you're driving too and you're excited and you want to write that down, you don't have to. Just click the links in the show notes. All the great resources will be there for you. Hey, Anne, before we wrap up and hit the closing questions, can I try a new question with you and just see how it goes?
Sure.
All right, cool. So Tony Robbins is famous for saying quality questions create a quality life. Successful people ask better questions and as a result, they get better answers. What is one question, I think in your context, you wish that school principals would more frequently ask themselves?
Bit of the topic, I'm trying to put it into a question format for you. Something like, how can our acts of courage lead to better student success?
How can our acts of courage?
Yeah, that would work. How can our acts of courage lead to better student success? Because I feel that often we are not courageous enough in our work in schools. We're not courageous enough to have some of those hard conversations that I know our colleague Jennifer Abrams talks about. We're not courageous enough to speak up when we need to advocate for what kids need. And we just kind of back off sometimes. And so I really think that educators need to develop that courage. And in so doing so, perhaps they're more motivated to do that if they see how when we are courageous, even though there can be some painful parts of the process of being courageous, that leads to student success.
Beautiful question. How can our acts of courage lead to better student success? And listen, I'm an open book and I like to be, you know, very transparent and meta. And so I'm just going to ask you this question. I want you to be candid. What do you think of that question I asked you? Do you love it? Do you hate it?
No, I like it.
Should I keep using it?
I like it. I like it. I definitely like it. It's a good question because, you know, and we're really in schools, we're all about asking questions now, right? It's all about the quality question to children? And are we asking quality questions of children? And so why shouldn't we have to be kind of playing with that same concept? Mm. You know, often in schools, we ask kids to do things that we're not doing ourselves. So it makes sense that if we're doing more questioning with children, that we should be doing that ourselves.
Awesome. All right. So I just have two more questions. You've basically made it. So great job today. What message would you put on all school marquees across the globe if you could do so for just a day?
Well, there it would be. Our courage leads to their success.
All right. And this is it. Last question. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Well, it probably won't come as a surprise to say that my first priority would be to have a gen ed teacher and a specialist in every classroom, because I think that having two perspectives on everything, two bodies in the room, two sets of talents is just going to be so much more powerful for children. So that would be my first dream. My second dream would be to somehow have all kinds of outdoor spaces that are learning spaces, that no matter what the weather, right? You said I could dream anything.
Yes.
That no matter what the weather, we could have indoor and outdoor spaces that were really accessible and usable for kids, no matter what time of year, because I think that sunshine, as you know, is so important for learning. And we have some research even that talks about how we learn better under natural lighting, and we need kids moving and all of that. And then the third priority would be to make sure that we have lots of tactile kinesthetic opportunities. I'm a big believer that kids need to move a lot, especially students who struggle. They tend to really need that multimodality instruction. And so what we're already seeing that I love is some of the flexible seating that's happening in classrooms, right? I'm talking to you right now while I'm sitting on a stability ball myself, because I think that's so good for kids, for many kids too, and standing stations and bike stations and treadmills desks. And, you know, I would just like to see all of that, all the hands-on materials that teachers want to have so that they can keep kids actively engaged.
I'm on an IKEA chair because I'm in Antwerp, Belgium, in a furnished apartment. And if you ever wondered what it was like to live in a real IKEA like store, I'm living in it. So there's some good parts to it and some not so good parts. But yeah. Well, Anne, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, maybe I'm going to have one request or piece of advice, I guess. I know that you had suggested that there might be a question around what word or phrase would you retire in education?
Yeah, we didn't get to that one. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So I'm going to use my last moment here to say that I really want educational leaders to retire the phrase push in. It's used in all 50 states. There's nothing in the law that uses the phrase push in. So it's something that just kind of generated naturally. We used to talk about pull out. And so this was the opposite, I guess. But push in has such a negative connotation, right? You're having to push your way into that room. And I think that sets up any specialists who are trying to come in and do inclusive work. When we talk about, oh, well, they're going to push in, that right away starts that relationship with that kind of negative hard work perspective. So instead, use, you know, collaboration, talk about in-class support, if you'd like, and of course, co-teaching and inclusion, all of those words, but stop using the phrase push in if you can. So that's my last request or word of advice. I can be reached at Anne with an E at ideasforeducators.com. And you can also reach me through my website, ideasforeducators.com. I'm always happy to answer questions, share resources. I do a lot of work with school districts around the country and do in-class coaching, earbud coaching, which is something we didn't even get to talk about, which is so exciting to do, as well as training and more traditional professional presentations. But of course, they're always caffeinated. And I also do a variety of webinar topics for people that can't get me to come out to their district in a timely fashion. So I'm happy to help anybody that has questions.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life's 10% of what happens to you, 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Danny and Anne. Head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Anne in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Anne, thanks so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
My pleasure. And thanks for running this podcast. It's such a valuable tool for people.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show. and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.